Welcome to your Spiritual Besties podcast. I'm Lauren Ledoux.
And I'm Rashida McCoy. We're here to laugh, cry, learn, and connect with you.
We discuss anything and everything from our everyday lives to the magical, mystical, and woo-woo.
So take a deep breath, grab a cup of tea,
and set an intention to receive, because you deserve it, bestie. Hello, Rashida.
Hey, Lauren, how are you today?
I have a happy thing to report.
What is it? Do share.
We always talk about sleep. I think that Gemma had her best night's sleep ever last night.
Oh, yeah? Like through the night?
Like she only woke up once during the night and then started her like early morning wake ups. But yeah, it was... Maybe
glorious.
Maybe, yeah, I don't want to like jump the gun here, but maybe things are shifting for the better. We'll see.
I love that for you so much, because having Miles and his whole teething sick self, I mean, the start and stop waking up, like, girl, I don't know how you've been doing it. Like, it's a lot.
I feel just conditioned for it now, I think.
I get like the first 3 or 4 months, like, because I was like, when we had Miles, I was like, man, did we do this with Macy? Like, was I always on edge like this, like not wanting to like fall asleep but falling asleep and not, you know, that whole thing? But I know we do get conditioned for it, but you've really like put in the work, so I'm hoping like this shift is here for you, because you just
thank you
so much.
You know, I think at a certain point I just like surrendered to it, because if you read the books, the blogs, and blah blah blah, it's like your baby should sleep through the night at 5 months, and it's like, like who's like, yes, there are some babies doing that, but like let's not act like that's normal. And yeah. What's going to happen is just what's going to happen. So it's okay. I've tried not to compare myself, not to go too deep, but Gemma's really into the show Bluey right now. And I was watching an episode yesterday with her, and the mom is talking about how when Bluey was a baby, that she was always like comparing her milestones to other kids. And then it shifts during the episode. And I just had like tears streaming down my face.
Like, this is exactly life right here. Yeah, I know we've talked about it before. I think especially as a first-time mom, you can't help but, like, compare, because you want to make sure, like, your kid's good. But it's one of those things, you do have to have that surrender piece and just know, like, they're good. They'll be all right.
Yeah.
You know, Macy still doesn't eat vegetables and I have to hide them. She'll be all right. I have full faith that she'll grow up just fine.
Yeah.
You know, so I've just let some of that stuff go too. So I'm so happy that there's some shifting in the air for you, Lauren. But
thank
yeah,
you.
Speaking of shifting, what do we have going on today?
We have a very special guest with us today. Today we have Anna Marie Green, and she is a licensed therapist, professional, and single mother on a mission to help individuals and family navigate their mental health and life's challenges easier and more effectively by combining energy work and psychology to help them reach their goals and experience better lives. She became a therapist in 2020 during the middle of the pandemic after witnessing how much the world needed more one-on-one work. She specializes in working with individuals struggling with anxiety, depression, and personality disorders by using and combining psychoanalytic, dialectical behavior therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy methodologies. She received her MSW and a certificate in human services from the University of Pittsburgh and a bachelor's in science from St. Francis University. She received her intuitive certifications from Breath of Life School, Mystery School of Healing with Abigail White, RN, and the Soul Reading Method certificate program with Nikki Novo. She currently lives in Michigan with her 6-year-old daughter and her best friend. When she isn't working with clients, researching, or learning, she is adventuring with her daughter, baking, or spending time with loved ones. She's inspired to do this work by the clients she has had the privilege to meet and the people in her life every day. Welcome, Anna Marie.
Thank you. You know, that was a long bio. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Welcome. It's nice to have someone who, one, has degrees and the intuition and all the things, because, you know, in a way, I feel like that's like where we're going. A lot of us are feeling like this shift, and, you know, we've gotten into roles or jobs or like a calling that we really feel called to, but we don't quite fit in the box that we're supposed to. Like, there needs to be more. So I love that you have all of that, as well as the intuition work behind it for the energetics. So welcome. Thank you for being here. We're so happy to have you.
And Anna Marie, we ask everyone the same question to start. And that is, what is spirituality to you?
Spirituality to me is really the ability to connect with yourself. Because I believe that, you know, source's light is within all of us. And so the rituals, the way that you show up for yourself, how you love yourself, and how you allow yourself to deeply know you and your soul is really spirituality to me, because, you know, that's your best connection to source, and best way to build a relationship with source is by building a great relationship with yourself internally that isn't reliant on the external.
Yeah. I love that answer. And I think really knowing oneself, like, I don't know, it seems like it should be so obvious. Like, yeah, I know me, I spend all my time with me, but it's so much deeper than that, as you know, through your professions, and being able to connect people with like the true self and with their spirit, with the divine is such a beautiful thing. And I love that you're able to provide, I think, let's say more than a therapist by incorporating this intuitive work. I'd love to know, like, what's your story? How did you get into all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So my story really started when I got pregnant with my daughter back in 2017, January 2017. Surprise pregnancy. I was a junior in college. Was not prepared for that. But it really made me start to look at myself differently, because up until that point in time, I was so fixated on like, what am I doing? What am I achieving? Am I meeting all my goals? Am I fitting in my 10-year plan? And do people see me as a leader? Like, it was very, I was very disconnected with myself. And, you know, for the first time, I had to be really vulnerable about where I was at, because pregnancy is not something you can hide. You can't be like, oh, it's fine. Like, I'm not. People literally see you. And, it made me face some really hard truths about myself. And I remember not feeling fully supported, but I was raised Catholic. And I've always had a super tight relationship with God, even if I wasn't like the perfect Catholic. And I remember not feeling fully supported in like the Catholic Church, because, you know, I would have people come up to me and be like, you made the right choice. Good job. And I was just like, you have no idea how hard everything is right now. Like, I was not supported. And so my friend introduced me actually to Nikki on Instagram, and I started slowly following her, just like watching. I was Catholic. So I was like, I don't know, like the energy stuff, I was a little bit hesitant. But I was just like, okay, we're still going to keep moving. We're going to keep grooving. I graduated still on time with my social work degree. And it just added another layer of like, now I know how much this work is needed, especially for moms, because becoming a single mom added this layer of, okay, this is where the needs are, like mental health wise, but just, and services. It just showed me a whole different perspective. Like, I had already been operating from being like a Black woman and being disabled, and now we just added like single mom to the lineup. And so I went to grad school I was actually in a joint degree program to get my MSW and my law degree at the University of Pitt. And my partner died after my first year of grad school, right before I was about to start my 1L classes, and he died by suicide. And it totally changed everything and shifted everything for me. I decided I wasn't going to finish out with the law program. I just was going to finish one more semester for my MSW. And I graduated in December, and he passed in May. And I just went numb for a while, and I didn't realize it, and nobody else really realized it, because I was still doing all of the things. And it wasn't until I had a breakdown in, I might sneeze. So just in case that happens, I might sneeze. I had a breakdown in 2020 where I just didn't know who I was, and I didn't know, I didn't feel deserving of my daughter. I didn't feel deserving. I felt like I failed everyone, you know, especially his death hit me hard because I'm a social worker. I'm trained in this. I'm educated in the mental health field. I'm educated in helping people, and I couldn't help him. And it really required me to go a lot deeper. I remember I, for the first time, scheduled, it was like a group reading with a medium. And I was like, this is the one time I'm going to do this. I was like, if he doesn't come through, I won't do it again. Cause I was still really hesitant about spirituality and energetic work. And he did come, like, I was one of the people who was selected. And, it was funny because at the time I didn't think I would be a therapist, and he came through, and she was like, oh, are you like a therapist? Or, and I was like, well, I'm a mastered social worker, but like, I'm not a therapist. And she was like, oh, well, he's going to be helping you with this work. And I was kind of like, Brian, you know, I don't want to be a therapist. Why would you say that? Like, only to later on in 2020, become one, because I saw just the need. And I realized that if I have anxiety and I can get depressed, because I was somebody who constantly was like, okay, this is an obstacle. This is a challenge. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to show the world that like nothing can slow me down. And realizing that all of those different micro actions actually were leading up to this breakdown, and was anxiety speaking to me in all these ways. And I wanted to help people navigate that. And I've always been really good at the therapy stuff. So it felt like a natural progression. It's just a part of me that I was denying for a long time for whatever reason. And then I started to actually integrate my intuitive gifts in therapy, but without me knowing. Like, I would get little nudges before meeting with a client, like, hey, the client's struggling, or like they might be struggling with this. And so I would kind of probe in that direction in the sessions. And when I did allow my intuition to kind of lead a little bit more in the sessions, clients were getting much better results. I was already like the therapist that people would send people to if like therapy wasn't working, because I can get to the root cause of something in like a blink of an eye, especially now. But, and then when I did go through the whole certification program, with Nikki, in the soul reading method, that was when I really took the full like leap and was like, this is what I'm integrating both of these things. And it was amazing. Like, clients who had experienced anxiety or depression pretty much their whole life were finally feeling free of it. I had clients who were like quitting their jobs and opening up businesses at like 50, in their 50s. And, I'm able to find relationships and all this different stuff. And I realized just how beneficial energy work is in the mental health industry. I definitely feel that the industry is going that way because people need deeper solutions. And it's not enough to just talk about the problem, and sometimes even approaching it just from like the cognitive healing level. It takes a lot longer. And it just, when you heal it at the energetic level, it just frees everything else. And people deserve efficiency in the mental health industry, which I think sometimes can get lost because therapy now is kind of like a trend. So like, it's very supportive, but it's not always the best first step for you, depending on what you are trying to work through and how honest have you been with yourself up until that point.
Anna Marie, thank you so much for sharing all of that. And I don't know, there's always been this thread, I feel like, when it comes to entering motherhood, where things just shift for us. Yeah. Lauren has felt it. I have felt it. Almost every single mom that we've had on the pod when we talk about it has felt that you are just in this type of portal, and you either get to sometimes like retreat back into yourself and not really look at things, or expand out. I would love to know. So, I mean, you shared a whole bunch of stuff for us, but let's talk a little bit more about like this intuition. You had said, when I listened to the nudges and I leaned in, you know, I start to see better results with my clients. And then you also said something that maybe therapy isn't the first step for people. Yes. As well. And I'd love to know like that piece, and also like what you meant by that. Yeah. And I had to say both of them because I have mom brain and I'll forget what I wanted to say.
That's okay.
So.
Yeah. So, when it comes to therapy not being the first step for people, what I mean by that is, so there are some there we when people become in survival mode, right? You know, you detach, a lot of times it's us detaching from our emotions or detaching from a part of ourselves, and so you become numb to it. So like you can talk about some things and emotions don't really hit you. You're not actually processing anything. It's almost like watching your life happen. And so for some people, when you are so deep in your survival mode, you'll come to therapy. You might talk about a trauma that happened, but you're not actually moving any of the energy. It's still within you. And so it take that's the individuals who, when therapists say like, oh, it could probably take like 5 or more years for you to like work through something, that's what they're really talking about, because it takes talking about it over and over again, be asking certain questions over and over again for you to start actually having emotions come up and energy to start to shift. Also, some people, because their trauma is so severe, it's so hard, that they'll come to therapy and they won't talk about it. Or they'll come to therapy and they won't actually want to talk about it, and their brains won't even let them remember what they need to process. I was one of those people. When my mom signed me up for therapy, probably like 2 or 3 weeks after my partner passed, and it was the first therapist I went to. And I remember going in there, and he was like a nice gentleman, and I remember being like, oh, I know all of the things to say because I'm in this field. And so I would say all the things. I would say, oh yeah, my partner passed, and like it's sad and I'm upset about it, but it's fine. Like I'm do and I would tell him all the things I'm doing, and he was like, wow, like way to go, you're staying motivated. And in my I remember feeling like, oh, he took the bait, thank God, thank God I don't have to talk about it more. And when you do energy work, and what I mean by not the first step, I find a lot of people who energy work is actually the first step for them, because it gets your energy flowing, it clears you out. So receiving an energetic healing before you start therapy is going to make therapy much more successful. There's so many people who are saying now, therapy doesn't really work for me, and they think they're just stuck. They think that they're unfixable, not that they need to be fixed, but they think that the problem can't be solved. And that's not true. It just means you have to take another approach. It means either doing energy work or something else with therapy, but not just, you know, putting everything on therapy. You know, a lot of times it's 1 hour a week. And for a lot of people, it can take like a whole half an hour just to get into what you need to get into.
And then by then it's like, oh, I'm
Yes.
almost done. You're checking the
Yes.
time. You
Yeah.
know, that's very interesting. I like how you explain that because it's very true. It's almost like, you know, when it comes to like some of these issues that we have, we're almost trying to just like hammer it in a way. You know, we're just asking to open up. And I've done therapy as well. And I find myself being a very open person in those type of settings because I'm like, I want to get to the bottom of like what I'm feeling, you know? But I can see like someone like my brother, for instance, he doesn't believe, quote, air quotes, in therapy because there's probably so much stuff he has to talk
Yeah,
about
that
that
is
he doesn't want
scary.
to. And even with me, he doesn't like sharing things and opening up about things. So I can see how, you know, maybe energy work is a good in because you're right. Getting all of those blockages or the energy movement on an energetic level will allow the physical level to really open up.
And a lot of times, like with the readings that I do, I always do whenever I'm starting with a new client for the longer container, one-to-one work, we start with a reading because that allows me to get to the root cause. And then I talk about it. I tell them what's going on, what I saw. Sometimes I can pull different memories and stuff. And every single time I have never allowed myself to face that truth. And it finally, like, they were like, I didn't know what to work on. I just know I was feeling this way, but I didn't know what it was about. Because a lot of the times we tell ourselves over and over, I had a good childhood. And it doesn't mean you didn't have a good childhood, but you can still have things that are traumatic for your brain, for your body, for your mind that you're not able to process. And trauma is just an event that we are unable to physically, emotionally, or mentally process and get ourselves out of that made us feel unsafe. So It's just one of those things.
Okay, say that one more time.
Trauma
okay. is?
Trauma is our inability to process something cognitively, emotionally, or physically that made us feel unsafe. So it's us staying stuck because we don't know how to process it. Either we don't have the time, we don't have the resources or the functioning to process it. And then it just kind of sticks with us so that we can survive it because we can't get ourselves out of it.
Yeah, I really like that. I think I tend to think of it as like undigested experiences in a way.
Yeah.
And yeah, they stick to your energy. They stick to your body. You can't just look to the mind. I'm a yoga teacher. I'm a trauma-informed yoga teacher too.
Awesome.
So I've been studying some of this for a while. And I see this all the time. Like, how are you supposed to identify your feelings if you can't feel your body because your feelings live in your body? Like, it's such I love this move toward more holistic healing.
Yes.
And I like the legitimacy that you lend to it. Not that it's illegitimate to be a reader or an energy worker or anything like that, but people tend to maybe have more trust in the academic system. Because that's what they know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's awesome because for as long as I can remember, I love taking like a process or information from one field or one industry and being like, I wonder how it would work over here. Mm-hmm. I wonder how it would work if we combine it. I'm even that way with like baking and cooking. I'm like, you know, this spice tastes like this. I wonder what it would taste like if I added it to like salmon or something. Like, and it's really powerful to be able to do that.
It really is. Oh, go ahead, Rishi.
Okay, sorry. I was just gonna say, well, it's also very needed, like what you touched on, Lauren. Like a lot of people, even for us, I feel like, Lauren, when we did our training, at first it was like, am I really getting this? Am I really seeing this? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be in this setting. You know, when we think about people that we're trying to serve and help, they might think that we're just making stuff up. So it's nice that there is someone who is a tried and true, like you said, Lauren, academic, bridging that gap, because we are in this moment of time where things are kind of shifting and we need more people like you know, Anna Marie, that can bridge both worlds to kind of help bring the collective into where we're trying to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And and that's why whenever anyone's like, well, how can you truly, I had a client just the other day who was just like, how did you find this information out on me? And I was like, I pulled the memory from your energy. And then I just like watched it like a movie screen. And she was like, I believed you cause she heard me on a different podcast. She was like, but then it's so different hearing it. And she's like, it took me 50 years to, be able to recognize what you're saying and what, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's really powerful. And I think a lot of us, when we're like, oh, I don't know, you know, it's your ego also can be your ego saying like, oh no, like, let's not go down that road. It can happen in therapy. Sometimes we stick to the topics, the stories that feel safest to us. You know, that's why a lot of people will be like, I've been processing this same thing for, you know, years in therapy, when the root cause is actually something totally different, but this topic feels the safest for you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Anna Marie, I would love to dive more deeply into depression and anxiety, which is not a sentence that I thought I would ever say before, because I've certainly had a lot of familiarity with that in my own life and have worked through those over the years. But I'd love to know, like, how would a client know that they're experiencing one or both of these things? Mm-hmm. And what do you see in their energy?
Yeah. So, I always like to kind of break it up into two different parts. So there is the DSM-5 symptoms of depression and anxiety. And then there's like the subcategories, right? And those are like the extremes. I always see that as like, that's usually the point where people are like, I need to go get help. I need to go on medication. I need to talk to a professional who can help me to not feel this way anymore. These are like the traditional thought of panic attacks, or like just anxious thinking constantly, not being able to focus, not being able to sleep. For depression, it's like maybe sleeping all of the time, not being interested in the things that you were interested in before. You know, even some people can have more, some of those like not self-harm thoughts, but just like anti-living thoughts is what I call them. Like, I don't want to be here anymore. What's the point? They just really, and they a lot of times self-isolate and or are really angry. So those are like the extremes. And a lot of times people are good at picking those things up because they're so in your face and like you, it's debilitating when it gets to that point. But before that point, there are several different things that kind of happen. I call them micro actions. For anxiety, I actually created a framework back in like 2020 after I was seeing like 30 clients a week who were all having anxiety. And I was like, there's something that the industry that we're missing. I was like, anxiety and depression doesn't just happen that bad overnight. Like, it's not just like you wake up one day and you can't function. It usually is a build. And so it's different micro actions that feel inauthentic. So for me, anxiety always shows up when I like how it speaks to me is I'm packing my schedule. I'm fixated and obsessed about like working towards my goal to the point where I feel like I can't stop working. For some people, it's try like they get overwhelmed in big crowds because those are the people pleasers, because they can't pull in what does every single person want and they can't become that because people pleasers mirror or they're really good at being chameleons. And then for depression, it's a lot of times, starting to just see like have a disinterest. Like it might just be like, oh no, I kind of want to go, but it's probably better if I do this. Like maybe choosing work over going with friends, even though you would love to go and catch up with your friends. So those are kind of some of the micro actions there. But it really is going to depend on you and the wound, the core wound, because based off of what survival strategy you learned from that wound is going to determine what micro actions, what symptoms you're going to experience that are eventually going to lead to like these really big debilitating, as we call it, mental illness. Energetically, what I see, so for depression in particular, there is the inexpression, like the lack of expression of anger or being unable to process anger because you either don't feel safe feeling angry. It's not the environment for you to feel angry, or you villainized anger or what anger means. But also it is when your human self, your ego is in conflict with your soul. So your ego, your human self has villainized your soul because like who your soul is, what your soul desires doesn't fit in the box that it needs to in order for your human self to survive. Or it's easier for your human self to villainize your soul so that it can digest, so that it can survive in whatever environment or boxes that it puts itself in. But no matter what, it's your human ego self trying to detach, not even detach from the soul, but just like creates, like consume it so that it doesn't shine, so that it changes. It wants it to be something different. And so you are literally, numbing yourself out or trying to numb yourself out. And then that spreads because you can't just have it be emotions and energy is really hard to compartmentalize. And so that's why people will have a disinterest in the things that normally interest them, or they'll hyperfixate on it. I'm one of those people. When I'm depressed, or when I have been depressed, I have hyperfixated on something and become obsessed with whatever my goals are, whatever I'm trying to do. And that's because it's trying to change, what your soul truly wants. It's trying to change how your soul truly shines, so that you can truly become what you need to in order to survive, or whatever you think you need in order to survive. And then anxiety is more so just a detachment from your soul self. So it's not like villainizing it, it's not like attacking it, it's not trying to, it's just burying it inside. So much so that a lot of times what I see for people is like their energy is actually kind of like floating outside of their bodies, or like sometimes, soul retrievals are really great for anxiety because a lot of times our pieces of our soul or our energy will go other places to preserve itself. And anxiety, you've detached from yourself as a form of preservation, self-preservation. And your anxiety is just that expression of like, hey, there's a detachment here. There's something that needs to be healed, released, processed in order for you to feel safe in your body again. And the way that your anxiety expresses itself is actually like little breadcrumbs to let you know what the root cause is. So when I was like in the depths of my, before I had processed anything, before I had really started this work, my core wound, because I had the overachiever anxiety language, was not being of value, not being important. And that was from stuff from my childhood. And it can be, you know, there's with the five anxiety language, there's like a core wound for each of them. And that's really going to kind of lead you back to what memory, what event, what situation do you need to process in order for yourself to fully show up and not feel unsafe in the world around you.
Wow. Okay. No, this is amazing, because I feel like you've literally just broken down these things and like pieces that you can like truly understand and get. Lauren, yeah. What do you think? Like, I know you asked the question, what do you have for Anna Marie? Cause this is great.
I feel like I need to like see all of that in writing and like really take some time to like to spend with it, you know, because yeah. It's really all very profound. And yeah, I'm like, I mean, as you're talking, like my own story pops up and people I know pop up, and I don't have a lot to add other than that I just find it like really, really fascinating. And it does make sense. I think a lot of times, just, you know, as someone who's been diagnosed before with depression or anxiety, like a lot of times it just feels like there's no reason for it.
Yeah. Yeah. People think that it means that something is wrong with them. And then that's what they latch on to. And it's not that something's, I tell people, I was like, your anxiety, your depression is something that's right with you. It's your soul saying, hey, I'm here. Just fix, like, let's just deal with the, whatever the trauma was. And and that's what I want people to feel empowered by the fact that you experienced these things.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, like, it was very hard to get to the root of things through therapy. One, because I started when I was a minor, and it was like anything that I said could be shared with my parents.
Yeah.
You know, and like, as much as I love them, their parents are always a part of your core wounds. Yes. I think it's,
of course. Yes.
You know, part of the nature of that. And then, yeah, I was like, well, I had a pretty privileged life and things are pretty good. Like, what do I have to complain about? Or, you know, and I just like couldn't get to the bottom of things. And then I tried a different therapy called neurotherapy. And that wasn't about talking. It was about like looking at my brainwaves and seeing what was up. And my practitioner told me, like, look, you're in, like, how do you feel right now? I'm like, normal.
Yeah.
You're in fight or flight. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So that's how I feel all the time. Okay. That's really interesting. And then kind of through that, regulating my brainwaves through yoga, through like so many other things, I was finally able to actually get to the root, but I just don't know that's if I would have ever gotten there through.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't. Yeah. And for, especially, you know, there are a lot of therapists that have their own trauma that they haven't worked through that then. So like, they don't necessarily ask the right questions all the time. But you know, one of the big things, like, you know, you said that you experienced stuff when you were a child. When I see anxiety and even depression in children, a lot of times it's either stuff from a past life or it's stuff from their parents. So like the ancestral, when people say like mental health is passed down, it's really like a wound that's passed down because like energetically your lineage is like, this will protect you. And so then it's just like, it's already in your like energetic coding. But energy work is something that helps with that. And you wouldn't always know, like, we don't always know, like, I don't know why I feel so anxious, but for a lot of kids, it's because their parents have unprocessed wounds or their grandmother had unprocessed wounds. So that makes a lot of sense that you needed something more than cognitive or just talk therapy.
Do you think it presents itself in like children for them to be able to work through it for the lineage? Do you feel that way?
Yes and no. So yes, in regards, especially if it's like past life stuff, because what I've seen is a lot of kids have a lot of past life stuff that causes anxiety and some mental health and behavioral stuff early on, so they can work through it, process it, so they can really get on to the main core, the meat and potatoes of their soul contract around like 21. So that, like, yes for that. And if they don't, then it kind of just gets like lumped in with the rest of their soul contract, which is why, you know, in your 20s, it can feel like, oh my God, like where you're just like all of these things. But no, so the reason that a lot of times, you know, parents, trauma, all that kind of stuff gets kind of brought into your energy and into how things are being expressed is kids are inherently connected, corded with their, especially their mothers, in the earliest parts of their life, because biologically that's how we survive. Because if we are able to sense, hey, if my mom is feeling unsafe, that means there's a threat. And so that's where a lot of kids will have anxiety, because if the mom is not processing her own stuff, or she feels unsafe being herself because of traumas, the child will feel that way, but they won't be able to know what's going on. And then, you know, when it comes to like a lot of times depression is something that is passed down. It's a wound that's passed down. It's not that the child needs to heal it, because, you know, a lot of times some of the stuff is so big. It's that the family needs to kind of like come together and heal it collectively. If it is turned, if the energetic, you know, DNA, as I call it, is turned on by an environmental factor as they're older, then it, and then usually that does symbolize like, yeah, it is something for that you can process on your own. But when it's turned on as a child, a lot of times it means, okay, the community, the family needs to come together, and the work is a little bit of everyone's. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm just gonna like speak for myself and my family that I've noticed, and I think I've shared this with Lauren, but I don't know if it's true for all. I'm not going to make a generalization, but I know in Black families, we do not talk about things like this. It is almost like a stigma or something that needs to be hidden. And the fact that you said that, like, you know, these things are brought on early on for us to come together as a community to heal these things, you know, it, I don't want to say it's like, it's no wonder like things can keep happening, but it's no wonder, like, especially in my experience with my side of the family, we hide things. And I'm not saying I'm just saying in general, like me, my family, I don't anymore, because I think it's really important for everyone to know what's going on, you know, things like health or anything like that. It gets hidden. And you know, when I think about just me and my family, and then so many other families where these things are looked at as weaknesses, we don't get to come together as that community to fix these things. And man, that's like, I don't know, it's very profound for me, because I'm just thinking about my own experience and like what I also do know from other families as well. But this is like why the work is important. And it's not something to be ashamed of or afraid of talking about. And I'm so glad that there's more light on, you know, mental illness, but I feel like we still have a ways to go and really understanding it.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm mixed. My dad's Black, my mom is white. And my dad, even when I was became a therapist, he still didn't like believe in therapy or like believe in the mental health thing. That's his thing. It's a little bit different now. It's like way different now, but that was not, I remember like one of the biggest things my dad always tell me is like, never let anyone see you cry. It shows weakness and it gives them satisfaction. And so like before I had my daughter, I never cried. And if I would maybe let it out once a quarter, I would have a once a quarter cry about something like that's it. And but it's absolutely that way. And it's just it's not that emotions are weaknesses, but in a lot of ancestral lineages, emotions were used as a weakness. They were turned, the narrative turned into that was a weakness. And that, because that's also a way, like when you don't connect with your emotions and you don't process the things that are happening emotionally, you are detaching from yourself and detaching from your own power and sense of self. And it's easier to control people who are detached from themselves. And that's my like, yes, energetic opinion, but also like my opinion of how I've just observed things.
What's happening now. That's what's happening like now, and why I feel like so many people are waking up to the fact that like when we talk about like standing in our power, like we have always been powerful human beings, but you know, when we fall into these systems of society, like they don't want us to be powerful. And I use air quote, they, you know, the system, not like some man or whatever, but It's very, very true. And even when you were talking about the different things of what these mental illnesses are, as it relates to our soul and our ego, like it just makes sense. And the system realized, hey, if we can like allow these things to happen, we have sheep that will follow and do exactly what needs to be done. And so, and that's also why it is so hard to like wake up to this fact, because you are going against status quo. It does feel wrong in your body because you've been trained from birth to assimilate and to act a certain way. And so those of us who probably present these mental illnesses are like really like waking up too, I feel like sometimes, and are having some type of, back and forth with it. So
Yeah, absolutely. And I always tell people, emotions are just messages from the soul. Standing in your power also means standing in your emotions. Whether it's anger, it's sad, it's discontent, they're all those emotions are just telling you something about how you're experiencing the world. And so it's never something to villainize. And when you can truly start connecting with your emotions, feeling them in your body, not just like thinking about them, because that's the big thing that I find is like, people think that when they're feeling it, it means creating this narrative around the emotion. So when they feel sadness, they make it mean this about themselves or about life, instead of just like, okay, this is what I'm feeling, and let me connect my body, my mind, and my energy with this emotion. But standing in your power is standing in those emotions, and because they're all parts of self coming forward.
yeah, I have a question for you. So you said, instead of just thinking about the emotion, you said feeling it in your body and, connecting. So let's say we have someone, I always come from like a beginner type of spiritual person. Let's say someone's listening to this, one of our listeners, and they're like, okay, so what exactly does she mean by this? So how can they feel these emotions in their body? And what can be done when they do that? Like, what is like something like really powerful to like allow them to kind of move through this? Now, and I know, working with you would be the best thing, but it's one of those things that's like sometimes we want to know what we can do now and then seek more after that. But yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the first thing that I have clients do is when you notice an emotion, I want like hold on to it. And I always hold on to the emotion in my chest first. So I'll close my eyes, I'll hold it there. I'll kind of like see like what color, what shape, does it have a scent? Just kind of to give it some type of visualization to make it easier to hold on to and connect with. And then allowing the sensation to like cover your body. Like when you're breathing in and out, just allow it. It's going to feel uncomfortable depending on the emotion. And then noticing like, what does it make your body want to do? Does it make your body want to run? Does it make your body want to like go and do a specific thing? Just making space for that. Is it something that's possible to be expressed in the moment? If it's not, then I always recommend like breathing through it. So breathing through the emotion, recognizing it, but don't create a storyline with it. I used to do this all the time where I was like, oh, I'm really sad about this. That must mean I'm ungrateful, or that must mean that like I have to immediately like change this, or that must mean that I'm not being strong enough. You create like, instead of like feeling the feeling, I just created this storyline about what it meant about me. And it made it really easy to turn on myself, turn on my emotions, and make them the villain. And so connecting in that way and then breathing through it, and then it's almost like resetting. And then you can kind of decide, okay, what did that mean for me? Like, what does this, my body felt it needed this. So what does that mean kind of for my next step? How can I express it? Because expression is going to be the best way to relieve it at first. And then you can kind of game plan. What does it mean afterwards? I always recommend like some form of like breath work to help release it if you don't have a lot of time to like dive down deep into it at the moment. You can also like stretch. Like I'm a big movement person, especially for relieving emotions, because I spent so long disconnected from that. I really needed to integrate my body into my emotional expression. So I'll like sometimes wiggle, I'll dance, I'll sing at the top of my lungs, anything like that, because especially music is something that automatically helps us connect with emotions in a way that doesn't trigger our ego, that doesn't make our ego go, hey, this isn't safe. We're not going to do this. We're actually going to like decide to go and like walk our dog or something, like instead of like focusing on the thing at hand. So you could do any of those things and it's going to be really helpful. Did that answer your question? Were those
No, absolutely. And
okay.
essentially what I feel like you're describing, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but really like this is what people mean by embodiment, like really embodying, these emotions and allowing yourself to express. Embodiment, I feel like, is such like a buzzword right now, but we don't truly know what it really means. Like how do I embody my sadness? Do I just cry? Like the steps that you gave, really allowing yourself to sit with the emotion, feeling it, allowing it to take over your body, not creating that story, allowing it to express itself, and then deciding what to deal with afterwards. It almost reminds me of, how some people, they're like in the middle of like some type of situation, and when they finally step outside of it and they're like, oh, I see it clearly for what it is now. But we're so often, I mean, it's our life. We're always in the middle of our life, right? But you are right. We create these narratives and these stories, and we never really like step outside of that. So, in doing this, it seems like we can have more control and really step outside of what's going on to really then use the mind to evaluate it, once the body has come to a place that it's ready and open.
Because once you and that's one of the reasons why I say, like, again, like, therapy might not be the first right step for you, because especially if your body's holding so much trauma and it's all disconnected, your body, your mind, and your energy, then it's the body can take a little bit to process things. So if you're doing the kind of like the more somatic, the embodiment work, and your body feels safe in the emotion, your mind is going to be able to relax, and your mind's actually going to be able to stop the fight or flight mode of survival and then look at things more logically and like help you process. And it's going to allow your intuition to come in. But if your body is like, no, like, we're in fight or flight, like, we're not feeling safe, and your mind is the only thing trying to fight for, like, for you to feel better, because your energy is also storing all this trauma, it's really hard. It just like, and I don't mean that as like, talk therapy isn't helpful. I just mean that it can feel like an uphill battle for a while, and it doesn't always feel great afterwards, because your body and your energy is still like stuck.
Yeah, I really like that. It also reminds me of, because we also went through the same training. When we were training, Nikki told us, just see what you're seeing and don't create that story around it. We are so good with like creating stories, right?
We are, absolutely.
But it's not true. It is not true most oftentimes, because you're right, we're not in that state of mind to actually sit with it. Wow, this is amazing.
It's, yeah, I love it. I love educating people on it because it gives you the tools back. Like, we think that, like, oh, I need to go to therapy in order to feel okay. And I tell people, I was like, you should never be codependent on therapy. Like, you shouldn't feel like if I stop therapy, I'm not going to feel good anymore. Like, you should be able to have some of the tools to be able to work through stuff, because life is going to be hard at certain points. There are going to be things that are painful to deal with, to feel, and being able to connect with yourself and not detach or come out of your body or villainize your own soul is so important. It's going to help you survive the ups and downs of life.
I have a question. It was triggered by what you said. And if you're uncomfortable speaking to this, just
That's
let me
okay.
know.
Yeah, you're okay.
So, you said you shouldn't be codependent on something like therapy. You should already have the tools. Do you feel like, based off of like what you learned in school and like your experience, do you think these things are not taught for a reason? So that, because I feel like a lot of times people look at things as a business, and certain systems have gotten really good at making money off of the people that need these tools. Anyway, I can get into that, but do you how what do you what is your take on that?
So I can't speak for all programs, all, schools and all that kind of stuff, but I know for myself, especially at my undergraduate institution, like, I will say it until I'm blue in the face, St. Francis has the best social work program in Pennsylvania, like, hands down. Like, I came out of that, I could have been a master level social worker in the industry right away. Like, graduate school was kind of like more of a box to tick. But we learned there, my professor, my advisor, Dr. Lynch, he said, A, there's no C-level social workers. Like, that's the first thing. There's no C-level social workers. And B is that your goal is to help them become independent. You know, the social work code of ethics, self-determination is like the top OG number one thing. And then on top of that, like, you want to make your clients independent. That is the goal. The goal is that they shouldn't need you. And although I don't know how much that translates over all of the time into like the therapy industry, because there's also other like types of practitioners that operate, not just clinical social workers. And you have these like businesses operating. And I will be the first to admit that like I have worked for different, like I've contract work with different clinics and stuff. And they did not love that like my clients would get done with, like I'd be done with a client maximum 6 months. It was very rare for me to have, I think I had like maybe 3 or 4 clients who I saw for like a year or longer than 6 months, because like based off of need. Otherwise, like I'd have clients who'd be like, okay, like we can just schedule like monthly sessions, like a check-in spent, like kind of like, you know, maintenance. I always call it like maintenance sessions. And I will say that the industry overall does want people to like come back, like that reoccurring revenue. Like everyone talks about that, but, and that's no like hate on the industry. This is just like my personal experience, is that there are certain people, there are certain businesses that want you to like keep coming. And that's why like you, there are some, you know, when I talk to some people and they're like, yeah, you like, it's good for a client to be with you for like 2 or 3 years. Like that's normal. That's the average. And I was like, it should not be. I was like, 2 or 3 years to get to work through like a couple problems and to like help them feel better. I was like, they shouldn't have to still be experiencing this, some of this stuff for 2 or 3 years just to get like to make a little bit of progress, you know? So I will say that's like my, and I've talked about this before. I think that there, as in with any industry, because there is in every single industry, there are the extremes, right? There are people who are not in it for the right reasons, who are just focused on money, who I would even say like, aren't like great. And then there are people who are like, I want to help people. This is my goal. And you're going to find that in any industry, even as like energy work starts to come into the mental health field more and more, which I believe that that is where it is going. You're still going to have people who are going to be more on the like, not so great side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, in school wise, as a social worker, I was trained to look at all systems too, like not just the person, but what's the family system? Like, what are they struggling with? What's the community and the physical environment? Like we were learning the systems theory as our first thing. And you want to empower, like your goal is to empower each client system. So the community, the family, all that kind of stuff. And that's, I bring that all into my work, my intuitive work and my therapy work. So my experience was like, I was taught to, you want to empower them and make them independent so that they don't have to keep falling all the way to the bottom whenever they experience a hardship. But I won't say that in all methodologies that people learn or schools that they go to that they're taught that, you know, they might just be taught how to psychoanalyze as opposed to how to implement solutions and help build clients up.
Yeah. Okay. So with that being said, like, obviously we can't send everybody to you because you need some work-life balance and time with your daughter, but, what should people look for when they are like at this point, maybe they've tried this embodiment technique and maybe something came up for them. They don't know what it really means. They want to work with somebody. What should they look for?
So I am always, when it comes to therapists, I personally believe that you should always find a master social worker because of that same pool of thought of, you know, self-determination for a client, empowering your clients. So, and like giving them the skills that they need, as well as looking at like the systems theory of the different type of systems of clients. And that's because it's going to be a little bit more holistic than just like psychoanalyzing your thoughts. But if you want like the intuitive side of it, you know, look for therapists or look for intuitives who have a background as a therapist, who have a background in mental health, and talk to them. I always say like schedule a discovery call, just see if you're even feeling like comfortable with this person, if you feel comfortable with their energy. And recommendations are always a great way to get connected with some of the like better, best practitioners. But yeah, I would start with that and use your intuition. Who are you drawn to? Maybe you were thinking, maybe you're listening to this podcast episode and before this you were like, I really need to find someone to talk to because like I've been going through all these things. And like you can take like, do you immediately feel like, okay, this is a sign that like, yeah, this is the process that I need to go. I need to find somebody who is good or can do energetic work and can do the, psychotherapy stuff. Does that answer your question? I hope it.
Yeah, for
Okay,
sure.
good, good,
Thank you.
good.
Yeah, and that leads me into your own program. I know you're offering a discount code for our listeners, so please tell us all about it.
Okay, so there are two ways to really work with me. So I have the, one-off sessions, the 60-minute, they're an energetic reading and healing combination. So as I'm going in and I'm reading and pulling the information on what the root causes are, what you can do to overcome them, all that kind of stuff. I'm also healing stuff as I go. So like if I see ancestry stuff, and that's really because when I'm in there and I see things are off, I'm not just gonna like leave it there and be like, schedule another session. I'm just like, I'm just gonna go and I'm just gonna fix it up. And then I'll tell you, what I do and everything. But at the end of those sessions, you leave with a step-by-step plan on how to overcome and heal whatever the wound is and the anxiety and prevent it in the future. And you truly get like an understanding of what the root cause is. So then if you decide you still want to go the therapy route with somebody else, or you wanted to work with me down the road, you have that foundation of like, these are the things that I need to work on. And this is how, I call it the soul plan, the soul treatment plan.
Love that.
And then I have a 12-week program. It's a one-on-one container. If this is truly like the combination of therapy and energy work. We start off with a reading so that we understand the problem at its core energetic roots. And we get the soul plan and we essentially follow the soul plan. But you're getting in these set, like you'll get, 60, 75-minute sessions. And we do the processing and we get to the root cause of different things. And then we're also doing energetic healings, along with it. And we're doing like the first month is really focused on the energy of what's going on. The second month is integrating that body work. So we're doing somatic stuff. We're consulting your highest self, your soul, your healing team for what's going to be best. And then the third month is really that subconscious cognitive re that's when we're really getting into the cognitive work. But yeah, it's the best of both worlds. It's 12 weeks because really that's most of the time all I need with people for one like problem area. And it's for people who just like feel stuck and feel like happiness is hard to maintain. But if you have any questions on any of these things, you can DM me on Instagram. At the offer for you guys is $100 off for the one-to-one container, and I believe it's $50 or $60 off for the 60-minute sessions. So yeah, you can schedule a discovery call if you want to learn a little bit more information to figure out which one's best for you, or you can go online and just enroll.
Oh, I love this so much. And I'm really excited about booking a reading with you. So, really, really excited for that. This has been an amazing chat and very illuminating, I feel like. And more of this needs, more conversations like this need to happen, I feel like. What do you
Absolutely.
think, Lauren?
Yeah, I found it super illuminating and I'm really excited about what you're doing too. And I hope that, yeah, I hope that the system catches up to it as well so that people can, use their insurance and stuff like that to get energy work at some point. Because it just seems, just from my perspective as an energy worker, it's so effective. And, I think that we need to look at things just like pull back. Like you were talking about what your skill is earlier. You're able to pull back and like see how different things connect. Like we need more of that in these systems to like really look at people in their wholeness and heal. So yeah, I appreciate all of it.
Absolutely. Of
And
course, thank you so much.
yeah, and it's so nice. I feel like, Rashida and I, we have our own system or we have our own methodologies and offers and things like that. And it's always great to expand that out so that people can find the right fit of help for them. So it sounds like you have
Absolutely.
a lot to offer.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. As someone, I feel like I had to go such a roundabout route for so many years to to heal. So if I would have had you in my life 15 years ago, things maybe could have gone a little faster for me.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I understand that. I feel that way about myself. I'm like, man, if I would have had me like 4 or 5 years ago, I was like, I could have jumped all of the kind of gunk in between somewhat, you know what I mean? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. But that gunk has become your medicine. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
And I feel the same way. Well, I loved this conversation so much. Rashida, always bringing it with the curiosity and the great questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We do have one more question.
Thanks so much for having me.
Right, we have one more question for you. Will you be our bestie, please?
Yes, of course. Of course. I love it.
Wonderful.
Yes. Thank you so much, Anna Marie. This has been truly amazing. And Lauren, thank you so much. And thank you for bringing that personal touch to the conversation, because I feel like when we do that, people can see themselves and what we've gone through. So thank you for that. Yeah. All right, besties. This has been amazing. We'll chat soon. Thank you so much for joining us for this incredible episode. If you loved it, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and tell all your besties about us.
You can also connect with us on Instagram at Your Spiritual Besties Podcast. And be sure to say hello and share your thoughts about the episode. Love you, bestie. Talk soon.